tal, East Tennessee? You know what that means? That's Spanish for how are you? I was going to do this whole show in Spanish, but I decided since I only know one sentence, I can count to 10. And also know a little song that we learned, that's how we learned the vowel sounds in Spanish. It went, I'm not going to sing it, I'm just going to rap it. A, E, I, O, U, mi perro sabe más que tú. And what that meant was, basically the vowel sounds in Spanish all sound the same. They always sound the same. They don't have all the differences, nuances like we do, unless you may be a Spanish teacher and say, that's not correct. But anyway, that's what Miss Goodwin said in my Spanish class in the seventh grade, and I'm sticking with it. And then, mi burro sabe más que tú means my donkey knows more than you. So I realize that is not probably appropriate for this show because it is somewhat insulting. But I have had people tell me sometimes that they think they know more than I do about cars. And, you know, I do have a pretty broad knowledge base, a lot of experience in the retail car business. You would not want to turn me loose on your engine in your Cadillac to diagnose an engine miss. I've got people who do that, and they're good at it. Also, you would not want me to paint your car. Although I think I could figure it out if I watched enough YouTube videos, I don't want to. I prefer to tell them what color I want and tell them I want it really slick, and then they make it so. You know, I am so fortunate to be surrounded by talented people. It's not always been that case. Sometimes you get somebody an employee that talks a good game and then really doesn't perform for one reason or another. I've become fairly adept at picking those people out. Interviewing right now is really hard. It's because there are so many jobs out there, and people are just being real picky, and they really shouldn't be because they're not that good. You know, it's not like they have some great skill set, and then many times they come in and they look like they, you know, just got off from a real tough match of beach volleyball, and they're coming in and say, yeah, what y'all hiring for? You know, that's not an impressive thing, but that's what we see, folks. I'm not kidding. I mean, some of it is just remarkable. Now, one of the areas that car dealers are very concerned about right now is the pool of skilled, talented technicians, because it's not a glamorous job, and a lot of people want glamour now. They want something that they can get excited about, and, you know, you can love cars and really enjoy the whole idea of fixing cars up and so forth, but when it comes to diagnosing and repairing vehicles under warranty or tearing out engines and transmissions and steering gears and gas tanks and finding electrical shorts and stuff like that. I mean, it's just a multifaceted kind of a skilled job. And we do have some specialists. For example, at Gateway, we have a diesel specialist. I wish I could find another one. We have people who specialize more in electrical, computer technology. I've got two guys that I've sent to school to be able to work on hybrids and full electrics because they say they're coming. I mean, I've sold two of the Mach-E Mustangs. I'm just going to call it Mach-E. It just still feels weird calling that little SUV a Mustang. Now, it does have a Mustang grill. And you know another interesting thing? It doesn't say Ford anywhere on it. It's like Ford was ashamed to put their name, or Mustang was ashamed to have the Ford name on it. I don't know what the deal was. On Broncos, the same way. Doesn't say Ford anywhere. Just says Bronco. And that's okay. Bronco is going to be a sub-brand, apparently, as well as the Mustang is going to be a sub-brand of the Ford Motor Company. You know, some dealers are actually building separate facilities just to handle their Bronco business. So I don't know. I am most concerned, though, about the talent pool and the ability to get people to turn wrenches. And, you know, it can be a lucrative job. It's less so in smaller markets. It's much more so in large markets. But then you still have to be good. You have to be knowledgeable and be able to work on two or three cars at the same time. I mean, some of the best technicians in the dealerships will have at least two workstations, and in some cases more. I've heard of technicians having four workstations, meaning that they would have a stall with a lift in that stall, and they would have all their tools set out in front of them and all the air hoses. And when they're working on one vehicle, if they run into any kind of delay, like for parts or something like that, then they'll stop working on it, they'll jump on the next one. And they just rush through their day like that, and they become very good. It's kind of like a doctor who does multiple operations in the operating room, and he's able to shift gears mentally and do the different tasks. You know, he doesn't accidentally, you know, replace the heart in somebody that needs a kidney transplant. That would be a bummer. But, you know, we don't want technicians messing up either. And sometimes they will get ahead of themselves. And it's up to the shop foreman, who is the actual, I don't know, the traffic cop in the shop. He's the guy that you'd probably never meet. Very critical job. You know, the guy that you run into as a customer is going to be the service advisor. And, you know, if you get mistreated in some way, you may end up talking to the assistant service manager or the service manager. And then if you're still being mistreated, maybe the general manager or the dealer, you know, somebody like me. But we don't want you to get to us. We want our people to take care of it if possible, and we want you to return. You know, you don't want to have one shot. You don't want to lose a customer over, you know, because you forgot to put their valve stem caps back on. I mean, little things will run people off, and I learned that a long time ago. So the shop foreman is the kind of like the conductor of an orchestra, and all the technicians, all the different people that are working on different types of issues, he needs to make sure that technicians turn wrenches, and if they get stuck on a diagnostic, then he's going to intervene and help them figure something out. Sometimes the shop foreman will do the research for a tech, because folks, quite frankly, sometimes you just can't figure it out. You don't know what's going on. You need another set of eyes on somebody's car. You would think, you would hope that that the technician working on your car would just be able to find it, boom, get it taken care of. But even doctors, I'm sure, when they get in an emergency room or a operating room and they're looking at somebody and say, I ain't never seen that before, I better make a phone call. And I know that happens, and it happens in car dealerships as well. But you want a shop, you want to do business with a shop, and you're not going to know this, but you want a shop that has a lot of collaboration like that, where the guys working there support each other and like working together and are willing to help and pull off. And You know, if we're running behind on a customer's car, then a guy comes over and helps somebody finish something. Otherwise, the customer gets delayed another day, and they're all upset. So when you have a lot of collaboration like that and the cooperation within a department, you have better customer satisfaction typically. But the shop foreman is the guy that coordinates all of that. Right now, the biggest delay that we have and any dealership has right now is for parts. And you can imagine if there's that many shortages out there for everything else in the world, like even potato chips and toilet paper, then there's going to be a shortage of critical parts when you need them. And the last thing you want to do is push a car outside that's not finished and it just has to sit there while the customer is in a rental car or a loaner car. Because I understand, folks, you want your car. You don't want to drive somebody else's car. And your car is in my shop, and you don't know everything that's going on. So it's incumbent upon us as a car dealer to keep the customer informed. That is something that I preach to my guys all the time. It is not the customer's job to keep themselves informed of the status of their repair. It is our job to do that, and don't you forget it. And sometimes they do forget it, and I have to remind them. But that's what we do in the car business. Well, let's take our first break, and we're going to come back and talk about Lincoln. Okay, I'm back. Before we get into Lincoln, I do want to remind people about the danger of buying a used car that has been flood damaged. I don't know if you've been watching the news over the last year or so, but there's been a lot of rain in a lot of areas, a lot of flooding. And you would think that when a car, the only thing sticking out of the water with a car is the antenna, that you would never have to worry about buying that car. Well, you do, because they do show up at auctions, and they typically are transported from the area where the flooding occurred to another area. And a lot of that is the East Coast. And a lot of cars are bought on the East Coast and migrate to Tennessee and Kentucky and Georgia and places like that. Of course, Georgia is on the East Coast. I realize that. But Tennessee is not, nor is Kentucky. And so sometimes these cars will end up in auctions in Statesville, North Carolina, Atlanta, Louisville, other places. And they get washed, literally and figuratively. That's hard to say. Figuratively. And so if you buy a car that's been underwater, more than likely the wiring harness has been changed. Sometimes the carpet and the seats and stuff have been changed. But sometimes the only thing that has been changed is that which did not work after it emerged from the waters. And so you get all kinds of issues, and normally they manifest themselves at the wrong time. And you end up, you ever smelled a car that's been really wet on the inside? It's been that way. Maybe you had a sunroof leak or maybe your air conditioning condenser tray where the water goes into was the drain was clogged up, and just over a period of time it saturated your carpet, or at least your insulation under your carpet. That smell is unmistakable. It's musty, and it is practically impossible to get rid of. I remember a 2015, brand new F-250. I was really excited. I never opened the sunroof on a vehicle, but I did going home because it was one of those new panoramic sunroofs, and I just wanted to experience it. I opened it up and got to the house and parked it. Next morning, I went outside, and it had rained that night. And guess who hadn't closed the sunroof? Me. And so it was literally dripping from everywhere. I mean, it was awful. There was, these are leather seats, brand new, standing water in the seats. And I know the seats are heated. They're cooled. The console was like an aquarium. And I was so upset. I was so mad at myself. So I got the towel, dried it off, took it into the dealership. Thankfully, one of my good technicians was working on a Saturday. I said, "What are you working on?" He said, "I was just working on this other, it was a company vehicle." I said, "Stop right now. Let's tear the interior out of this thing." So I helped him, and we gutted it. And it was soaking wet. Now, a lot of people would just take all that and take it outside and let it dry, but I know how this insidious smell can appear. And so we put fans on it, pulled everything out, put fans on it, and I ordered new carpet, new insulation, and new leather for the two bucket seats. The back weren't that bad, really weren't bad at all. They just got splashed a little bit, but the front seats were just, I mean, they might have been revivable, but I just wanted to get it all replaced. I was so upset. And so anyway, I wasn't crying or anything, but I was just mad at myself. So I just went ahead and ordered everything, put it all together, and it was a great truck. Kept it for, I think, 2 years and traveled in it, and it never did have that musty smell. But these things are being sold, and you just got to be careful not to buy one. I remember looking up under the dash of a car that I just didn't feel right about things. Had that musty smell. Looked up under the dash, and there was sand on the firewall under the dash. Yeah, it had been underwater, deep. And so, how do you appraise a car like that? I mean, how do you determine the value of something that you don't even know how much longer it's going to run? And a lot of people get upset and say, "Well, I never had it underwater. I bought it from a used car dealer in South Carolina." And, they didn't know it. And how would you know it unless you did the stink test or you actually look for signs of flood damage? Pull the vehicle history, and sometimes it will show up on Carfax, and sometimes it won't. So you know, sometimes you just have to have somebody. I would always have a used car inspected if I'm buying one. I don't care what it is. If it's a late model car, maybe not. One owner, if I can talk to the owner and stuff like that, I'll feel nice about it. But if it's you know, if it's a car from some far off distant place, I'm gonna have it inspected. We do inspections for people. If you don't want to buy, if you find a car somewhere else and you want us to inspect it, we'll do it. We'll charge you to do it. We should. You know, our time's valuable. But gosh, that peace of mind and knowing that a car is right before you drive off in it. You know, don't let the dealer that you're buying it from inspect it. He might cheat, but hopefully they wouldn't. But if you want to get it inspected, just arrange it and just tell them, be honest. You know, tell the dealer that I'll buy this car maybe, you know, if we can get together on price, but I will not buy it if I don't get it inspected first by an independent third party. And you just find out who that is. And, you know, if you ever have the need for that, you can call me. I mean, I can either arrange it with somebody that I know up in the Tri-City somewhere, or, you know, you can bring it down to Gateway and we'll be glad to do it. We just need a little bit of advance warning. Anyway, call me on my cell, 423-552-2020. Okay, let's talk about Lincoln. You know, Lincoln has an amazing history. Some of the most luxurious cars of the 30s, and you know, you think about what was going on in the 30s, the Depression. It was they built some amazing cars, V12, V16 engines. The technology there, they were competing against Packard and maybe not Duesenberg to a large extent, the Chrysler Corporation, Cord, Auburn. You know, some of these old names that you may or may not have heard of. But the company was actually founded by a guy named Henry Leland in 1917. And, of course, he named it after his favorite president, Abraham. In 1922, the company was acquired by Ford Motor Company, and Ford still owns the brand. It's not a separate corporation. It's just a brand of the Ford Motor Company. But following World War II, Ford formed the Lincoln Mercury Division. So, you know, like General Motors had Cadillac, Chevrolet, Pontiac, GMC, Oldsmobile, and so forth. Those are all divisions of General Motors Corporation. Well, you know, Ford corporate entity has the Ford brand, the Lincoln brand, and the Mercury brand. At one time, they even expanded that and bought a bunch of companies in Europe, like Land Rover, Volvo, had a controlling interest in Mazda, and then they decided, nah, let's focus on our main core brands, Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury. And then what do? They get rid of Mercury in 2010. But at the end of 2012, Lincoln reverted to its original name, the Lincoln Motor Company. And that was after, you know, Ford kicked out, and really it wasn't Ford, it was Alan Mulally, who became the CEO of Ford. He said, what do we own all these other companies for? They called them the Premier Automotive Group. It was Jaguar, which was a loser, Land Rover, which was a loser, Aston Martin, which was a huge loser, and then Volvo, which is a Swedish company, which wasn't a loser, but, you know, they were just barely getting by. And so Lincoln now remains the sole luxury nameplate of the Ford Motor Company. But it was originally founded as a freestanding division above Lincoln, and it was called the Continental. It was integrated with Lincoln in 1959. For 1969, the Continental branded Mark series was marketed through Lincoln, and they finally, instead of a Mark 1, Mark 2, Mark 3, and so forth, they finally adopted the Lincoln name. They were no longer ashamed in 1986. Currently, Lincoln consists exclusively of luxury crossovers and sport utility vehicles. The biggest one is called the Navigator, and the smallest one is called the Corsair. Of course, I'm not a Lincoln dealer anymore. We still service them. We still do warranty work on them at Gateway, but we take care of our Lincoln customers. But, you know, Lincoln just became, the volume was so low, and it still is. There's Johnson City Ford, I think, is the Lincoln dealer. Yeah, they're the Lincoln dealer in the Tri-Cities market. I think there's still one in Abingdon. But Lincoln came Ford came to us and said, hey, do you really want Lincoln? I mean, you're not selling that many. We'll pay you this much money for it. And I said, what? And he said, yeah, we'll pay you this much money. Really? And they said, yes, really. And I said, okay, sold. And so I let them have Lincoln back. I got some pushback, though. I got some customers that said, what'd you do that for? You abandoned us. And I said, well, not really. I can still get you a Lincoln. If you want one, I'll get you one. And I've bought a few from through Johnson City. I've helped people buy some Lincolns. I help people buy stuff all the time. That's just something I do for the fun of it. We'll take our last break and be back here in just a minute. Folks, if you ever have a chance, go to Dearborn, Michigan, and go to the Henry Ford Museum. It is absolutely amazing. It is something that everybody needs to see. And then, associated with that is the Greenfield Village, and that is the headquarters of Ford. And another really good little jaunt is to go to Fairlane, which is just right down the street, and that is Henry Ford's home. And it's where it was a family farm, and he ended up building his dream home there. It looks like something Frank Lloyd Wright would have designed. Very dark and a lot of wood and stone and stuff like that. But he had his own power plant that was developed by one of his best friends, some guy named Thomas Edison. I don't know who he was. But anyway, he got this guy off the street, I guess, and got him to develop a power station. And he was able to run his entire household operation off the river that passes right behind his house. Fairlane, the Henry Ford Museum, and just Dearborn and Greenfield Village, and then Dearborn in general. If you're in that area, it's definitely worth a look. Well, anyway, folks, thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.